This is VSiN by the Books on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin the Tuesday edition. It is VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross here, downtown Las Vegas at Circus Sports. Our closer back home in Cleveland, Ohio, getting ready to get on the road again on Thursday. When are you taking off for Omaha? Out here tomorrow. Are you ready for more planes, trains, and automobiles?
I am ready to never connect in Washington, D.C. ever again. So we're gonna try a little different route, this route, however you say it.
Yep.
We're gonna go through Chicago, and then we're gonna jump down to Middle America, buddy. It's here, and I'll tell you, and I appreciate our people that jump on social media and let us know, especially our resident meteorologists.
Oh yeah,
we're dodging a bullet. I can tell you that because. I can't remember the gentleman that told us, but he's like, hey, there's been some weeks there where it's downright awful to be outside. So we do catch a small break in the weather. It's going to be high 80s. The humidity is not ridiculous here for Thursday and Friday, so we're good. But yes, here we go. Mayhem is coming, my friend. Back to it. Back to the air tomorrow.
It was a cool 106 in the desert yesterday. I'll just leave it at that. We had a hot one yesterday. Got a great show lined up. Matt Youmans, the weather doesn't bother him out here in the desert. Matt's going to join us here, as he always does, on a Tuesday. Can't wait to get his thoughts on everything going on, obviously, in the NBA, NHL, and U.S. Open, getting ready to begin on Thursday. Kate Constable, old friend, is going to join the program. Great to catch up with Kate, breaking down the WNBA. She's the host of The Better Angle. Be great to have Kate on the program today. Rex Hoggard, love to catch up with Rex. He's going to be on the grounds at Oakmont. Gents and I have been just locked in already for the last 24 hours, really getting into the numbers here. We'll get into some of that. And I can't wait to see this golf course as Rex sees it through his eyes today. And then JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, what are we going to see now that the venue is switched to Indianapolis? We'll catch up with JVT in hour number three. But as we like to do, as you wake up with us here each and every morning, let's catch you up on the highlights and headlines.
Help your bottom line with today's highlights and headlines.
Whoa! Stay out of the sin bin. It did not happen last night for the Edmonton Oilers. Brad Marchand gets this one started early. The Rat struck quickly in this. Remember, I believe he's now the first player in the history of the Stanley Cup Finals to end a game with an overtime goal, a game-winning goal, and then begin the following game with a goal inside of the first minute. That's what happened last night as Brad Marchand gets that done. 6-1 is the final score. And Jensen, really a lot of layers to this game. And the biggest layer being is that Edmonton was just flat out undisciplined and could not stay out of the penalty box. What, 112 penalty minutes that we saw last night in this game? And we talked about it with Rachel Doerr yesterday. We knew they're going to be more physical. That did not work out as a strategy at all. Never in doubt. We cashed the overs. I got a little bit squirmy there, but you did get the 5-on-3 goal late in the third here to get it to 6-1. You never had to sweat out that puck line for the Florida Price there. And, you know, if you watched that game last night, after watching the first two, you went, Jensen, what was that?
Yeah. And also Brad Marchand, if you had him, we talked Conn Smythe yesterday and just how those odds have plummeted. Yet again, here we are, three straight Stanley Cup final games where he's had a goal. Of course, Florida has won now two of those. And how about this? Of course, our great friend of the program, Jonathan Davis, our colleague here at VSiN, he sent me literally the TV picture
of
one of the big time stats. This is crazy, right? So the Oilers trailed the Stars in their series for just a tad over 14 minutes of ice time. How about it's already up to over 2 hours, 126 minutes and 12 seconds. That's how much the Oilers have been playing from behind against Florida. And buddy, as we kind of, you know, assess this game and potentially look forward, you could see that Florida can tighten the screws here when they want to. And that is a bad, bad omen here for the Oilers offense, which we felt could be an equalizer. But man, Florida has figured it out from a way to eliminate or at least limit chances for Connor McDavid, Draisaitl, any rebuttals whatsoever. little to no opportunity for Edmonton to get back in this one last night.
The other nugget, great nugget from JD that he passed along to us was on Brad Marchand. And as you mentioned now, he's now 4-1 to win the Conn Smythe. How about this? Going back to 2011, every game that Brad Marchand has scored a goal in the Stanley Cup Finals, his team has won, with the exception of game one of this series. So he's now scored in all three games here to begin the Stanley Cup Final. He, as I mentioned, 4-1 here. Sam Bennett now is the favorite. He had a breakaway goal last night as well. He's now plus $1.75. Bennett is to win the Conn Smythe. You see Connor McDavid, and that's what we're going to get to here as the program goes on. But 250 is now where he is in the Conn Smythe. He was taken away last night, and so was Leon Draisaitl, and really not by their – it was by their own admission, by Edmonton, by staying in the penalty box there. You kept playing 4-on-5 from the onset of this thing. You never really got to get that offense going. Ironically, the only goal they had, Edmonton, Corey Perry, in a power play early in that second period. Jensen, they had two-thirds of this game down 2-1 to play and at that juncture and got nothing going after that early goal in the second period. Never in doubt, shifting numbers here, complete domination by Florida. And again, if you're Chris Knobloch and company, you got discipline, boys. We've got to be disciplined because we cannot – this style isn't going to work, and we proved that last night. You want to be more physical, that's fine, but you got to toe the line like Florida normally does. They crossed the line last night, and they got called for it often. How about the beginning of the kids in Major League Baseball? So we begin the Roman Empire in Boston. So finally, you get Roman Anthony getting called up. Last week, it was Jack Caggs there in Kansas City. Not a great day. 0-for-4 with a walk and an RBI ground. I did have a big error, obviously, too, that led to a run here for the Rays in a 10-8 win for Tampa in 11 innings. This one went back and forth. We were on the over on this. That easily cashes there. But, Jensen, what about the youth movement now? That you go from Caggs and you go to the Roman Empire here in Boston.
This was kind of the plan all year here for Boston, was to get at least a couple, if not all three, of their top prospects up. Remember, early in this season, Dave, we had Christian Campbell, who ended up making the opening day roster, signs that big extension before he even plays an inning of big league baseball. And then you get Marcelo Meyer because of the injury to Alex Bregman. It was more a necessity than anything. And yes, Meyer had been playing quite well down in AAA, and also another injury to Willy Abreu, but necessitates an opportunity for Roman Anthony to come up. We were CJ Nikowski and I talking yesterday on MLB Network Radio, Sirius Channel 89, and we were saying, okay, we heard the news from Ken Rosenthal, like, well, where is he going to play? Like, the outfield is pretty much set. You've got Duran in left, you got Zdeno Rafaela in center, and then you had Abreu in right. And so we found out that the injury issue was going to put Abreu on the IL. Okay, that opens a spot. Now, here's the part that, you know, we talked yesterday about, you, do you believe in Boston? We saw that make the playoff price is still upwards of 3-1 and some spots 4-1. It's a lot of youth, man. It's a lot of youth in a big-time knockdown division, and you kind of saw that youth being served maybe in a negative way yesterday as the Rays took advantage of some over-aggressiveness. But I think overall – we probably cannot pass some judgment here for at least 3, maybe 4 weeks. Give these guys times to acclimate. But there's no getting, you know, past it. This is the future. The future is now here for the Boston Red Sox.
If you saw that error in right field, look, I played some right field, Jensen, because I wasn't great at second base when I made the All-Star team. So they put you in right field, right? That's normally where you put the worst defender out there. And he did make a play that I felt like I could have made. Is this just one of those, we got to figure out a spot to play him in, and he's if this is where it's going to be now because of necessity, as you mentioned, is that going to be okay? We talk a lot about this with the Red Sox now, with Devers and Bregman, who's playing where, and it feels like, do we have, like, misfits not playing the right position? We're looking offensively. This is the number one prospect in all Major League Baseball, so we get that. But defensively, is that going to be something he's got to think about too much?
I would say that he's probably going to be fine.
Okay.
I don't anticipate any – you know, prevailing issues. And all that being said, welcome to Fenway Park, too. Yeah. One of the most unique right fields that he will ever play. So, yeah, that's why I said I usually don't like to pass judgment on these young kids for at least 3 weeks, kind of get them, you know, a couple of road trips, a couple of home stands, and seeing some different arms, at least from an offensive standpoint. But, dude, there's no denying that if these three put it together, the Red Sox are right back in the conversation. And the prevailing sentiment then would be, do the Boston Red Sox now become buyers and sellers, to which once Abreu is ready to come back off the IL, you're going to have to find a way to either, you know, allow playing time for everyone, or someone's got to go. And it's not going to be Roman Anthony. It's probably going to be Willy or Abreu.
So I look at the Sox now in the standings, four games back of the five games back of the Rays and the Jays, who both, again, won last night, obviously. Tampa winning there in Boston. Toronto with a, they come back and win this game late against St. Louis. Yankees right there, they're nine games back there. Are we really looking to fight the Blue Jays and the Rays for a while? If you're looking for the futures market for Boston with this youth movement, you're really just looking LCS, as we've talked about, and or you want to take those long shots 60-1 in the World Series, because to win the division, it's the same number now as the LCS. Again, the book's giving you no extra value in winning the American League Championship Series versus winning the division. I mean, Jensen, that is shrewd by the books.
It is. And if you remember, it was last week or the week before when we looked at potentially some dark horse long shot lotto tickets for best overall record. What we had Tampa right around 250-1. Toronto was 400-1. They're both 6.5 games back at Detroit.
How about that?
With a boatload of baseball left to go. I'm just saying, you know, it was one of those numbers that just stood out. And you know, Tampa is now all of a sudden plus 50 in the run differential. And if you want to know where that stacks up, that's third next to the Tigers and the Yankees. So they're staying power here for the Rays. They just keep on. Tampa's going to do Tampa things, and that's what they're doing right now.
They don't ask how. They just ask how many at the end of the year. That's it. All right, when we come back, let's break down what we saw a little bit last night in Game 3, and what shall we see possibly in Game 4 Thursday. Game 3 of the NBA Finals is tomorrow night as well. And, oh, by the way, the U.S. Open in Oakmont. We'll preview it all next year at VSiN by the Books.
By the Books, right here on VSiN.
We're going to have Matt Humans join us in the very next segment, and we're going to talk a lot about the U.S. Open and certainly the NBA as well, Jensen. But let's look ahead very quickly to Game 3 tomorrow night between the Thunder and the Pacers as we move the series now and shift it back to Indianapolis. Right now, you can play the Pacers here about plus $1.80 to win this game outright. They're about 4-1 dogs here to win this series. Now, they were about 5-1, came down a little bit, plus 475 right before we got to game one in OKC. And it is interesting to me that you can look at the first two games very different ways. Complete domination by OKC until about the 7-minute mark of the fourth quarter of game one. So really, this should be 2-0, wink, wink. And that's why the numbers have gone back close at 4-1, not 5-1, but 4-1, even though it's 1-1. Or you can look at it from Indiana and say, we played as poorly as we could play for 7 quarters of 8, and we're even, 1-1. How would you choose to look at that from a gambling perspective here? Because I look at this and I go, I get it. Everybody wants to hop back on OKC. I just wonder if there's a little danger in that as we shift the series back to Indiana.
All right, so I think I had seen a couple of trends here. Teams that win game two and are a road favorite of more than 3 points are either 6-1 or 7-1 straight up, and also 6-1 or 7-1 ATS in that third game. So just food for thought for people there. But I just think overall, the Thunder could have figured a couple of things out about, and we highlighted it, you know, Haliburton got limited a bit more. And I think the swarming nature of Oklahoma's perimeter defense is something also to factor in here. Now, there's going to be a boatload of energy at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. Everyone is going to be up and away here with the first finals game in what it feels like forever. But I do think the defense is a way to focus on this now, Dave. And no official play yet, but that 228 total, I was like, you know what? I wouldn't mind taking a stab at the under here. Is it now time to kind of look this way? And if the Thunder can kind of silence and take that crowd out of it early, you know, do you take the energy out of the building? Do you keep, Indiana from maybe retaining any confidence at this point? So that was the lean I had. Let me throw you a couple of player props. Interested in your thoughts. So on the Indiana side, I looked to Nembhard, and I also looked to Haliburton, but not in the ways you would think. I actually looked to Nembhard's assists five or more. You can get it right now, I think, $1.54 at DraftKings. And then for Halliburton, I looked at rebounds at five as well. And that also is $1.45 at DraftKings. So instead of going the points route, obviously, with where you'd be want to be on the under for the total, I looked at some of the secondary statistics. Those were the two that popped for me.
The Nembhard one is interesting, obviously, because he hasn't been shooting it great. Now, he was a little bit better and a little bit he went over his points prop here in game two. And, you know, I've been looking at him because defensively he's a guy that one of the main guys is trying to slow down SGA, which feels like an impossibility at this stage. The Halliburton rebounds one, he's got to be more active. He was so inactive in the first three quarters of game two. So how does that manifest itself? Is it just offensively or – for a team that, you know, Pascal Siakam's not pulling down a ton of boards, right? Even though he's their biggest guy with Evan Turner coming off the bench there. Yeah, maybe Halliburton's trying to get involved in that way as well and really try to be that more of a triple-double type guy, which doesn't mean he has to have the explosion of points, but maybe an all-around game to kind of facilitate there a little bit with the assist and get more rebounds. That's the way when he was really effective against the Knicks, those are more of the type of numbers he was putting up. So I'm seeing where your head's at there and kind of like it. But they're going to have to get Halliburton going a little bit more offensively, and that could lead to those Nembhard assists to try to feed Halliburton and get him going a little bit. No disrespect to Andrew, but you'd rather have Halliburton shooting the basketball more than the Andrew Nembhards of the world. So I can see that equation if you're looking to some other player props and not just side and total. We mentioned here the big one last night. All eyes really were on this game last night in Sunrise, Florida. And I kept watching this thinking, well, boy, if you watch games one and two, or you heard about games one and two, and then you watch game three, you're like, well, this isn't what I was promised. This is not what we thought we were going to see. If game four coming up now Thursday, and again, we go right back to that 6.5-point total, which is amazing because that's hit now all three games of the Stanley Cup Finals. And the Oilers now plus $1.24, Panthers close to $1.50 favorite here. Again, we talked about it briefly off the top of the show. You cannot spend time in the penalty box like that to that degree because it mitigates your best weapon, which is Connor and Leon Draisaitl, arguably the two best players certainly on your side here. You gave them no chance last night. I know that seems like a simple equation to get back off the mat, but I guess the question now, Jensen, is are they too far gone after a 6-1 deficit here in game three to really be able to flip the script?
Yeah, and it would have to be flipped quite quickly, you believe, right? There would have to be almost that first 5 to 10 minutes. You better get a goal on the board and take momentum away, because I think Florida now feels like they have the high ground. Kind of that UFC analogy here for you, Dave, where Florida has Edmonton down to the mat. And, you know, whether it be a guillotine, whether it be a submission opportunity, like I think they feel they have as much leverage as you possibly can. And now they are not going to try and allow Edmonton to find any escape route, any way to get up for air, because that's the thing you fear, right? As soon as Edmonton gets up, now all of a sudden they get to their feet and they've got that puncher's chance again. And boy, do they have some big behemoths that they can land in a very short amount of time. So if I'm Florida, urgency remains there. Bob has been phenomenal. Wouldn't mind looking at him a little bit more now for Conn Smythe, because he has really locked it down between the pipes. So I'm with you. I do lean the under now, 6.5 here, where I think Florida can almost run the clock out if they wanted to. They have a little puck possession. They can, you know, just kind of hang back a little bit and then they get on the power play. It's almost like the rope-a-dope. Florida knows that Edmonton is going to have the aggressor mentality, and you mentioned it with the penalty minutes. They'll just be like, Edmonton will make the mistakes, and we'll just capitalize on the power play.
Yeah, if you keep playing that style of hockey and you keep playing 4-on-5, it's going to cost you eventually. And they held out as quickly as they could for Skinner, had to pull him late in this one there, but they did him no favors back there as well. So, again, that's a critical game four here for Edmonton, who still has home ice, by the way. So if they could figure out a way to somehow equalize this thing, then you would have two of the last three theoretically in Edmonton where they have a big home ice advantage. But that game four feels like it's going to be paramount come Thursday night. You want to bet smarter, smarter insights right now. You can check it all out here at VSiN.com when you wake up each and every day. Greg Peterson, the man does not sleep. He's got his Major League best bets for you. U.S. Open prop bets. I got asked a question on X. I'll answer it later, Jensen. My favorite play, I've been combing through these numbers. We'll get to some interesting plays, possibly for the U.S. Open as well. Steve Mackinnon's got his bullpen update in Major League Baseball, Thunder and Pacers. Wes Reynolds going to join the program tomorrow, his U.S. Open preview. You don't want to miss that. And oh, by the way, really good main card coming up this weekend in the UFC with Kamaru Usman, the former champion, against Joaquin Buckley here. Buckley, a massive favorite against the former champ. We'll catch up with Lou Finocchiaro. He's got it now for you right now if you go to VSiN.com, but he'll be with us on Friday. So right now, for as little as $9.99, get full access to all these VSiN articles. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe and sign up today. Okay, Jensen, not a surprise to you. I was immersed yesterday. We're going to talk to Rex Hoggard later on today there from Oakmont, watching their coverage on Golf Channel. And it was, as you would expect, absolutely fascinating. Okay. Just watching Oakmont and the changing of the course through the decades, right? So this is going to be the 10th time they've played it at Oakmont, which will be the most for any U.S. Open venue. And, you know, Oakmont had this reputation as just being this kind of beautiful brute. Back in the day, they tried to put trees in the 80s and 90s, and they said, no. That's not us, Jensen. Trees, gone. Removing this thing. It's wide open, and you can stare down the belly of the beast if you want to. She's right there for you to watch. And what it is, it's super intimidating for the players. And they're talking about that a lot, how intimidation really could rule the day this week at Oakmont. Jack Nicklaus had this to say about the U.S. Open in general, a guy who's won at Oakmont back in the day, and he said this: a difficult golf course eliminates a lot of players. The U.S. Open flag eliminates a lot of players. Some players just weren't meant to win the U.S. Open. Quite often, a lot of them know it. Jensen, you and I talk about this all the time, the belief. Like, do I belong here? Like, you can eliminate a lot of players on your card this week if you follow that creed that Jack kind of just laid out there, that, look, I don't need to tell you that. The U.S. Open will tell you that. And another great quote about the U.S. Open, Jensen, is this. They say this: we don't come here to embarrass the best players in the world. We come here to identify the best players in the world. That mentality, if you don't have it this week, Jensen, you have no chance to win.
Yeah, it is a masterclass in having a short memory. And knowing when you hit a bat, we say this all the time as pitchers, like, you can't do anything about the previous pitch. You can certainly learn from it, and positively or negatively, whatever the result is, you have to leave it. And those guys that are elite at shot to shot, taking what they need, taking their medicine, and also reinvigorating confidence in every shot, those are the guys you look at. So I got a few identified, my friends. We're going to be in good shape. Can't wait to run it by Rexy and see what he thinks as well.
Yeah, we talk about maybe mentally not really tough last night for the Edmonton Oilers. You better be mentally strong at Oakmont this week if you want to win that United States Open. Matt Youmans, he'll expand on that when we come back next here at VSiN by the Books.
VSiN by the Books, right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here on a Tuesday edition. Jensen, always love catching up with Matt Youmans. Give him a follow on X, as we do. Matt Youmans 247 joins us now here in the Progressive Guest Line. Does a great job up and down the network. Got to hang out on Saturday night. Matt, I wish my picks were better in the UFC, but we had a good time.
That was a great time Saturday night, except for we were not cashing tickets.
No.
We bet on Patchy Mix, I never want to hear that name again. I think just in the last couple minutes while we were talking, Patchy Mix just got hit in the face 10 more times. And Sugar Shane did not have much game on Saturday night. He was outclassed, and that was not a big surprise. You and I were talking about that's probably a public underdog.
Yep.
And it just worked out that way.
Yeah, we said it watching that, like, oh, boy, hate being on the side of the public here. Was very disappointed in O'Malley. But you're right, you nailed it, though, man. Patchy Mix, the biggest disappointment of that one. I wonder who's going to be the big disappointment at Oakmont this week, because there will be one or two, Matt Youmans, that we go, man, didn't see this coming. Xander Schauffele, but ex golfer misses the cut here. We talked a little bit about it in the last segment, just how mentally grinding Oakmont is going to be for the players this week. What type of golfer are you identifying, besides obviously Scottie Scheffler, that you're really looking for the makeup, the DNA of a guy that might be able to get across the line this week?
That's a really good question, because I talked to a former pro golfer about this last week. And, you know, he basically reeled off the names of some of the elite players. It wouldn't surprise you, the list. He told me he thought to win this. And I said, you know, I think it's got to be somebody who's mentally tough, first and foremost. You got to have an all-around game. And you've got to be mentally tough because this course is going to test these guys. It might be the toughest test on the tour. It's interesting. 9 previous U.S. Opens at Oakmont in Pennsylvania. Only 27 golfers have finished under par in those 9 previous U.S. Opens. So if you go back and look at the Masters and the PGA, there were a bunch of big-name players who missed the cut, right? That's going to happen this week, too. There are a bunch of – it wouldn't surprise me if a guy like Rory McIlroy missed the cut this week. Or, you know, we just saw him miss the cut in Canada. There's going to be some big names that don't make it to the weekend. So you got a par 70 course. It's interesting that there's no water or penalty areas on this course. But the rough is super thick, and the putting surface is going to be fast. It's going to be some of the toughest putting conditions these guys have faced. 168 bunkers on the course against the par 70 course that plays at 7,372 yards. And there's a par 3 where a lot of guys are going to be hitting a driver. So I just really think, above all, you've got to be mentally strong and be able to handle adversity. And that's why I'm throwing out some of the guys I feel like can't handle that. Guys like maybe Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Colin Morikawa, guys who have shown me they're not mentally tough enough to win a tournament like this, where over 4 days you're going to handle a lot of adversity and overcome it. And so yeah, I am looking at – I'll tell you what I'm looking at, too. Some of the European players who excel on the tougher courses and the tougher conditions.
Matty, that's right where I went, too. I have Tyrrell Hatton at 45-1, Shane Lowry 45-1. I did go back to our native land here and looked at Xander, even a long shot here at Brooks Koepka if he decides to show up. Even Johnny Rahm at 12-1. An intriguing thought as well, the Spaniard. So do we think that people might be a bit overweight here as far as wanting to jump in for a Hatton, a Lowry, that kind of ilk? Or is it a, hey, it just doesn't matter. You got to go for shot making. You got to go for guys that are great at scrambling and of course, making those big time putts.
Yeah, you definitely got to be a scrambler. You're going to have to – saving par is going to be a big deal in a lot of these holes. You know, and I don't dislike any of those players you mentioned. Obviously, a lot of people have written off Brooks Koepka, but he's still got it. You know, there's at some point he could rediscover it on a course like this because he's had success on courses, you know, tough courses like this in the past. Shane Lowry is my guy. Hopefully he performs better than Sugar Shane did on Saturday night in the UFC card. Shane Lowry, all right, the 54-hole leader at the 2016 U.S. Open of Oakmont. He led by 4 strokes after 54 holes, and I ended up finishing second. But I think that tells you a lot about a guy like Lowry, who's won a British Open. He's competed and won on a bunch of tough courses. And he's also been knocking at the door for a long time now. I mean, he's been in contention in a lot of these tournaments and not winning. But I think Lowry's the type of guy who can win this week. I bet him last night. You got a good number, Jensen. Last night, circa, he was Shane Lowry was 33-1, and I did play that last night. And Matt Fitzpatrick is interesting to me because this guy he stinks almost every time I bet him. He stinks. So I think I'm going to bet him again this week, and that probably guarantees he misses a cut. But Matt Fitzpatrick is at 120-1. He's played in 10 U.S. Opens. He's made the cut 9 times, and he won the U.S.
Okay, and that's the thing, too, about Matt Fitzpatrick here. When he won at the U.S. Open up there in Massachusetts, one of the tougher golf courses that you can play. So I like where his head's at here, Jensen, that it is going to be sometimes the guys that you don't think about to play a tough golf course. And I'll say this, too. The big move overnight is the drop in the odds board on Rory McIlroy. Well, I don't know if they've been listening to us. And, look, I'm not trying to rail on Rory. I'm trying to tell you why he was unbettable at those prices. He is now at circa. He's over 14-1. You're getting double.
Whoa.
You're getting a seismic shift in the market against Rory McIlroy. So that is a bit surprising to me. Look, I wasn't going to play him anyway, but Matt, good to have you back here. Did you see this, that overnight Rory's dropping like a rock all of a sudden, and Bryson DeChambeau has leapt ahead of him as the second betting choice? And I get it with the form, that, which is crazy to think about. The guy just won at Augusta in April. Here we are in June, and it feels like a completely different guy. Are you surprised that the books have dropped Rory now to 14-1 in some spots?
Not that surprised. I don't think many bettors have interest in Rory this week. Just his attitude since he won at Augusta seems like a guy who's kind of checked out. Right? He finally accomplished that goal he's been chasing for 10 years. And he got the career Grand Slam, and he won the Masters. He even said, you know, after I accomplished that, it's kind of hard to go out and grind on the range as much as I did before. I don't think Rory's as motivated as he was. And, you know, if you watched him last week in Canada, he looked like a guy who didn't even want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was looking ahead to the U.S. Open. But I'll just say that I agree. I think DeChambeau should be your number two power-rated golfer behind Scottie Scheffler this week. I have no interest in Rory. It would not surprise me that much, Dave. And Jensen, if Rory missed the cut this week, I think you're better off betting a guy like Xander Schauffele, Ludvig Åberg, somebody like that. You know, Shane Lowry, we've been talking about. I've got a list of players I'm considering here at longer odds, too. And I don't have Rory McIlroy on my sheet at all. In fact, if I bet anything involving Rory, I'm looking to fade him this week.
Got it. Matty, quickly in the NBA Finals here, and I tell Dave all the time I like to do these cross-sport parlays. So for the heck of it, I put Scotty to win the U.S. Open and the Thunder in the under 228 here for Game 3 at Bankers Life Fieldhouse tomorrow. Just overall, the NBA for you. Where are we at in your mind with the Finals? Did the Thunder finally kind of show the answer key of how to shut down Halliburton and company, or can Indiana really ride the highs being back home for Game 3?
Yeah, by the way, Jensen Lewis continues to impress on VSIM Pro. He's out on the college baseball path all week, and he comes back and he's firing WNBA plays last night. Which, so this guy's a maniac. It's very impressive. Anyway, where the NBA stands is Pacers get one on OKC, and they played like it on Sunday night, right? Didn't play with a lot of aggression. Or edge, and OKC brought it all because their backs to the wall. Thunder had to have that game, and it played out that way. So the Pacers have two edges in this series, three-point shooting and coaching. And as the series goes along, you're making a lot of adjustments, and typically the better coach is going to have an edge, and that's Rick Carlisle. Pacers also going to be back at home with that crowd behind them. I think you're going to see a much better effort from the Pacers Wednesday night. Obviously, OKC is a better defensive team. They're bigger. They got the better lead guard, go-to guard, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. A lot of edges on the OKC side, and that's why you're seeing a road favorite here, five and a half points. I'm playing the Pacers, actually, plus 5.5, and if I lose Wednesday night, I'll come back with them again in Game 4. I think it's going to be a split in Indy, and then it goes back to OKC at 2-2. But the Pacers have to shoot the three ball better than OKC to have a chance to win any of these finals games. Pacers made 18 threes on 46% in the first game and shot only 14 for 40 in Game 2. I think you'll see the Pacers shoot better from three, and Tyrese Halliburton's got to show up much bigger than he did Sunday night.
Yep, he's got to be much more active earlier in the game. He was no-show for the first three. Matt, appreciate you as always, my friend. Can't wait for the Open to start on Thursday, and I'm sure we'll catch up again soon.
You bet. Thanks.
There he is, everybody. Check him out. VSiN Primetime. Matt Youmans right here. Give him a follow at MattYoumans247. Back with the Daily Diamond next.
You're tuned in to VSiN by the Books right here on VSiN.
We are back, VSiN by the Books. Dave Ross, Jensen Lewis here with you. Great conversation with Matt Youmans in the last segment, and I do like it when we kind of align. Again, for people watching and listening, we didn't talk to Matt before we talked to him. And you and I talked about Rory yesterday, how we felt like he was a fade for us, and that we've gone through some of those numbers and found you could find Rory McIlroy to miss the cut at 3-1, plus 300, right? So even though the numbers have dropped, 12-1 at DraftKings, plus 1450 now for Rory here at Circa. That number, Jensen, has not moved as of yet, right? So there's your value if you want to find it. Because yesterday, if you'd played Rory to miss the cut at the same number, 3-1, he was still a single-digit favorite to potentially win the tournament. So, again, they haven't caught up on that yet. So if you're asleep at the wheel there, you want to, if you want to fade Rory like Matt's going to do, like I'm going to be doing here, Jensen, that might be the way to go, is play that to miss the cut number at plus 300.
And I just locked this in. I'm going to put it in for VSiN Pro subscribers. You can, there is an 18% boost. And I believe DraftKings is going to run some of these profit boosts every single day leading up to and during the Open. So I used mine on Bryson DeChambeau to win, and that gets him from plus 750 to plus 885. So lock that one in. I do think that if there's anyone that can handle it, that knows what it takes, that Bryson is as good as any, and I'll take the elevated odds payout as well.
Yeah, and for a guy that's won two U.S. Opens, he's the reigning defending, obviously winning last year at Pinehurst. That's another difficult golf course, not as difficult as Oakmont, we get it. And then when he won in 2020 at Wingfoot, if you remember that place, that was not easy. He beat up the rough that year. So physical strength, Bryson DeChambeau still has that. I know he's not as big and brawny as 2020 Bryson, but you're going to need some physical strength out of those bunkers and certainly out of the rough this week at Oakmont. I kind of like where your head's at there. Ready to get in some of the ponies action here. First Bet's got you covered. Sign up. You're going to get access and exclusive promotions and bet on hundreds of thrilling horse races every single day right from your phone or your computer. Visit firstbet.com. That's the number one stbet.com. Use a promo code VSIN200. Score a 20% rebate on all of your wagers for the first 60 days. Up to $200. Do not miss out. Start betting today at firstbet.com. All right, let's get to it before you send off to Omaha for college baseball. How about some pro baseball? It is time for today's edition of the Daily Diamond. Okay, Jensen, so what you've done to begin today's edition, you've looked into that crystal ball a little bit and found some odds associated with the World Series numbers. What have you deduced today in the Daily Diamond?
All right, so we start up with Power Up. MLB releases their top 10 rankings, or at least MLB.com does, each and every week as we go through the regular season. So I thought it'd be a great time to just kind of look at it. We're 60, 65 games in for most teams on this regular season. Here is, according to MLB.com, Dave, here are your top 10 teams and their respective World Series odds associated. Now, I find this fascinating because we just had a matchup of the Tigers and the Cubs over the weekend, and the Tigers took 2 of 3 over Chicago. Your Metropolitans, third in the power rankings, still 7-1. The Yankees and the Dodgers, who are your betting favorites in the American League and the National League, respectively, 550 and 280. Look at the right column. Let's start there. Dodgers and Padres got their first series of the year. By the way, this is weird scheduling quirk. June 9th, the first time the Dodgers and the Padres meet all season. So Padres are 28-1. They were a game behind the Dodgers going into last night's affair. You're telling me that there's that much of a discrepancy between that? I thought that one was very curious. The Astros have just quietly found their way back to the top of the American League West. We talked about them yesterday. The Giants, who also entered yesterday, a game behind the Dodgers in the West, 30-1. And then a team we didn't see coming whatsoever, the Cardinals, all of a sudden, 60-1. Now, if you had to take a stab, let's eliminate the left column, because I think you'll have unique hedge opportunities for any of those teams if you get one from the right side. If you had to hitch your wagon right now to a team in that right side of the column, so Phillies at plus 950, Padres 28-1, Astros 14-1, Giants 30-1, Cardinals 60-1. Hit your wagon to one of those teams. Who do you got?
Padres 28-1. Not close for me. That would be the team that I would trust the most. Remember, they're a game away from doing everybody a favor and beating the Dodgers last year. I mean, they're right there on the precipice of not having that Dodger and Yankee World Series. And for somebody that was holding a 125-1 ticket on the Mets to win the World Series last year and a 60-1 ticket for the Mets to win the pennant last year, really would have been nice if San Diego had held off the Dodgers, and then I could have got that San Diego and Metropolitans NLCS last year, maybe history would be very different. But that's because I do trust them, right? And by the way, by the time I was making those wagers, that was last June, about this time, when the Mets were did not look like the Mets, and they had a great second half and all of those things. I will point, for the record, when I played that 60-1 on the Mets to win the LCS last year, Padres were the same number at that time. They were 60-1. And you saw how close they got to playing for that, right? And the Mets did get to play for it. So I think you're 28-1, Jensen, right there in the Padres. If they get in, and I don't see any reason why they won't at least be a wild card team at this juncture, unless the Braves really step on the gas. They get a win last night to break their losing streak. I'm with you. I kind of like that number, 28-1, for the Pods. The Giants are a popular team, Jensen. Could they be falling into a trap today, maybe in Coors Field?
All right, so they've won five in a row, and here's the intriguing part, and these matchups are always fascinating, especially within the division. The headline is Giant Trap. Is this a trap? It's a trap for you Star Wars fans out there, Admiral Akbar. The Giants go to Colorado. Okay, these are weird betting trends. The Giants are only 7-8 straight up as an away favorite, which I thought was intriguing. They are a monster to the under, 12-2-1 as an away favorite. So we are in Colorado. Just remember that when we're looking at this, okay? The Rockies 9-21 covering the run line as a home underdog, which they are today. Can I interest you,
oh boy,
potentially in a Coors Field under? this is Kyle Harrison against Carson Palmquist.
My goodness.
Shield your eyes, people. It's an 11.5. That's your total. Any interest in the Giants-Rockies full game under today?
And it's juiced to the under. So they're picking up what you're putting down. Minus $1.19, I'm here seeing at DraftKings towards that under. Well, here's the deal. If I hop on and I'm not watching, that would be like torture to root for outs in Coors Field with those two pitchers on the bump today. So I love the trend, though, and I do think that might be the smart money way to go, is play the under. But if you do, hold your nose or go for a jog, like a long jog, make a nice sandwich, and don't watch, because it will be torture to try to keep that game under 12 runs. You got one more today. Speaking of trying to make some money, we like to make good money on bad teams. White Sox and Astros. Astros is a good team. White Sox, not so much. What do you have?
This is either a whiteout or this is a liftoff for the Astros. And again, more intriguing lines here. Houston, 12-17. They're underwater, covering the run line as a home favorite. It's just weird to look at some of these numbers. Chicago, by contrast, as an away underdog, and they've been that plenty of times, 17-15. But more importantly, and here's your caveat, the White Sox in non-division games, so against teams outside the American League Central, 26-17.
Wow.
Covering the run line. Can I interest you in the White Sox plus a run and a half today? Here are your prices. If you're feeling a bit frisky, it's minus $1.37. Shane Smith gets the ball for the White Sox. Actually been pretty good for them against Lance McCullers Jr. Total of 7.5 juice to the over here at DraftKings.
Well, I will tell you what I do like about that handicap is that with a low total of 7.5 and you're giving me a run and a half, I do like that math equation, right? That does work, certainly from a betting angle. And the Sox, as you mentioned, I mean, by their standards, they're playing better baseball these days. Dare I say, with the Rockies and with what the A's have reverted back to being, whatever city you want to put them in, the A's, the White Sox, could they be the third worst team in baseball? Is that fair?
Yeah, just by standings alone, I think you look overall.
It's still going to
be. White Sox are technically the second worst.
Still the
team.
Second worst. But, like, just kind of like where we kind of reseed them with this demise of the A's.
I wonder if we could, right?
Maybe move them up a run?
And I know the record's worse. Yeah, I know the record's worse, but you might be able to put the Marlins as the third worst, and the White Sox could be out of relegation territory.
Oh my!
With that one,
I might hold my nose with you today. Take the Sox and the run line there. Take the run and a half. By the way, you want to get unmatched transparency, records updated daily, AI betting analysis, real time global betting info, alerts directly from the pros. You get all of that and then some when you go to sharpplays.com. Startup.com. So once again, this is not a startup. They've been around since 2011. They know exactly what they're doing. Trusted by the pros, watched by the books, SharpPlays.com.